ahead and call the June 19th meeting of the Mill Creek City Council to order, and we will begin with the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mayor Pruitt?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Holtzclaw?
Here.
Councilmember Bond?
Here.
Councilmember Todd?
Here.
Councilmember Cavallari?
Here.
Councilmember Mead? Councilmember Steckler?
Here.
Councilmember Mead notified us he would be unavailable tonight, so may we have a motion to excuse?
So moved. Second.
Second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Passes unanimously. Next up is audience communication. We have a sign-up sheet. Okay, Mary Kay, you're up first. Name and address, and please limit your comments to 3 minutes.
Okay. My name is Mary Kay Voss. Address is 15226 12th Drive Southeast, and I will beg your indulgence. I go 3 minutes and 10 seconds. I swear it's only 10 extra seconds. I served on this council for 8 years, back from 2002 to 2010. What started as a community concern about the city manager's absence since mid-April has now become a concern about the official conduct of this council. We're confused. We've been told repeatedly that the city manager is ill, taking sick leave and now vacation pay. But you have also said, although she is ill, she's working. In fact, she's conducting city business. So in lieu of appointing an acting city manager, which would be the most appropriate, you have chosen to allow her to work from home for what appears to be an indeterminate length of time. More confusion. Since she's working from home, the mayor is getting her work to her and bringing it back to the office. Why? Why is the mayor involved in this at all? She's not part of the administration team. She has no authority to run the city. RCW 3518.01 says the city manager is your chief executive office, and she shall be responsible for the proper administration of all affairs. 3518.06 Part 7 says the authority of the city manager is to keep the council fully advised on the financial condition of the city. First quarter financial reports have not been presented to you, unless you got them today in your packet. Why? Because the city manager is indisposed and unable to approve them. Why? She's working from home. Why is she not approved the financial documents for the first quarter? You're the fiduciaries, and had her finance manager, who actually prepared the reports, present them to the council and to the public. RCW 3518.14 says the council may designate a qualified administrative officer to perform the duties of the manager during the absence of the manager. It has been common practice for the city of Mill Creek that when a city manager has been out even for a few days, an acting manager was always appointed. Why not now? Please note, that is a qualified administrative officer, not a council member. More confusion. 3518.11 says council members shall deal with the administrative service solely through the manager, and neither council nor its members shall give orders to any subordinate of the city manager, either publicly or privately. So please tell me, why are staff members being told that they are now going to get directions directly from the mayor? Really? Since when? 35A1303 clearly states the mayor shall be recognized as the head of the city for ceremonial purposes and have no regular administrative duties, like running paperwork back and forth. First point, the mayor has no authority to act in an administrative fashion. She is not part of the staff. Why is she the contact with the city manager rather than a department head? Two, Christina Baylor of the state's auditor's office said that the exit conference contact is now the mayor. Why? She's an elected city council member like the rest of you are, and not an administrator, and she has no authority over employees. So who is allowing the mayor to assert herself into this way? Wouldn't it be considered usurping your city manager, the authority of your manager, You know, that one who is at home diligently working and doing the job for the city. This could be solved very easily if you would do what every other council has done by naming an acting city manager until Mrs. Palazzotto can return to the city having regained her health. In the meantime, we can only question you. You and your motives and your agenda, both public and private. Thank you.
Anybody else want to talk to the council tonight? Going once, twice? Okay, we'll have another opportunity at the end of the meeting. Presentations. First up is the Park Mitigation Fund analysis, and this is here for information only, that we're going to be taking a harder look at it. Director has an opportunity. She prepared a great deal of information for it, for which I'm appreciative. But what we want to be able to do is to let her know what we want for our next meeting so that she has an opportunity to prepare it. So if you have questions, are you going to do a PowerPoint too?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So, but we want to make sure that we give her whatever information she needs so that she has an opportunity.
Well, this has been a coordinated effort. The Park Fund analysis doesn't just include me. It includes a lot of information that Gina has put together. We've collaborated on it. Scott has a piece in it as well, as he looks at the legal aspects of this. But we thought we'd at least put something together, given the request on Friday. The park mitigation fees really come from the city uses the SEPA, and to identify impacts to the city park, which requires two components, a neighborhood component and a community parks component. There's been a little bit of confusion, so I thought I would walk through this Timber Creek Ranch, and Gina may be able to add some input here. But this was a development that was done outside of the Mill Creek city limits, and they needed to have us expand our UGA. And so we were able to leverage that, do a deal with them, and were able to get them to contribute $430,000 to a community park and another $500,000 to an other neighborhood park, nothing specified specifically. There's also another component, Exploration Park, which is near and dear to our heart right now as we look at building that park. There was land donated by the developer in lieu of mitigation fees, which is a little uncommon. But the developer was also required to pay $335,000 to a community park fund. Vintage, the recent development that we all know about, was also required to contribute to neighborhood park. I don't know that it was technically specified to Exploration Park, but that's where planning has put it. So we have a balance in there related to Vintage and their mitigation fees of $254,000. They also contributed $154,000 to community parks. Then there's been a question floating around about REIT. There was a lot of REIT money that was contributed to the park fund. Between 2000 and 2010, it was almost $1.9 million. And there were projects that were assigned that were carried out. But the rules say if you do not no longer have projects related to the money that was put in there related to REIT, you have to transfer that out. So as we've worked through getting some of this history, we're going to be doing that in June. That isn't to say that you can't use the REIT money and dedicate it again. But right now, we just want to clean up the books and get the fund looking accurate. That's a little bit about the history. This gives you a synopsis of where we're at 5/31. You can see we do a rolling fund balance. The total is on the left. Before I made transfers from REIT back to the REIT fund, we were at almost $3.5 million. We had $1.7 million in community parks. North Point Park is now at $143,000. We had $250,000 that went in there, but we've been spending as we've gone along. Other neighborhood parks is at $696,000. And then the REIT was at $442,000 that had been transferred in and not used. And then we have interest that accumulates on this fund because we invest this fund in bonds. So what I've done is prepared an allocation of the interest in preparation of taking the REIT money and sending it back to the REIT fund. And that would give us adjusted fund balances at 531 of 2.945 in total. And then you can see the breakdown is almost $2 million in community parks. North Point Park would have $165,000. And other neighborhood parks is at $800,000. So as you ask the questions, you know, with our impending projects, we've got the sports park coming up. We've got Exploration Park. And now we've got some information on Heron Park that I don't know if it's been shared or not yet. But those are some of the things that we're working on as we look at the park fund, what funds are available to use to take care of these projects. And Scott was asked to do a use analysis for park funds and REIT, which I think he's prepared and has handed out some information to you.
Mm-hmm. So I have a quick question. So the, yeah. The mitigation fees, they must be used solely for the parks, correctly? So they, the money we have in there has to be
Yeah, and that's what I'll explain when I go through the memorandum that I handed out.
And secondly, just out of curiosity, do we have a dollar value of the land value that was donated by the developer?
Yeah, we do. I think it was $600,000 or
$700,000. Let's see. So they were required actually to, based on the levels of service, to provide 0.25 acres, and they actually provided 1.22 acres. And
I think over here it says that's for timber.
Yeah. So at the time, the estimated value of the land was $700,000. That's for the circle, if you will, for North Point.
When they donated.
Correct. Right. Correct.
Oh, go ahead. First, thanks, Peggy, for the numbers. I appreciate it. Would you back up one slide for me, the
yep.
number slide? You know me. I love the number slides. But I should have brought my glasses. So you talked about I believe, if my history is correct, when we transferred money in to the REIT fund is when we were getting ready to do the joint project with the school district for the soccer field over there that blew up and we didn't do. So I thought we just put the 500 and something in to get to the 1.2 that we needed?
No, we put in 1.9 throughout the period of 2000 to 2010, and it came in in different chunks.
Okay.
Over that period of time, there was no million or whatever you're referring to for the school district.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a lot of different money that went in, and it didn't necessarily just go for that. There were other parks that were being developed at the time, Heron Park, Cougar Park, North Point Park, I think, or not North Point, but North Creek. And so as those projects were done, the REIT balance came down, but this money's been left in there for probably since 08.
Over a period of time, we put 1.9 in. You're only feeling like we need to take 5.5 something.
That's the remaining.
The remaining of that 1.9, because we spent that part, so you want to take the rest of it, put it back, but that's why you're not putting the 1.9 back, because we did spend a bunch of it on approved purposes called parks. Okay. And then the next one, go forward one slide. Just to complicate things, my memory or knowledge could be exactly wrong. I was under the impression that we had this equipment replacement fund, and I had been told once upon a time we were collecting money in that to replace the turf to the tune of $400,000.
That's not included in here because I'm just starting to peel that onion.
Okay.
But if I recall correctly, I think they put $140,000 into the equipment replacement fund for the sports park. But I have to double check that.
Over the life of the park?
Sorry.
Total over the life of the park? I thought it was on the order of 400,000, but I could be just remembering that wrong. Total over the period of time, I thought we'd collected about enough in 2004 dollars to pay for a new set of carpet when it wore out in 10 years, which was on the order of $400,000.
Yeah, I think the number is 140, but I'd have to double check that.
But so anyway, that would also, next level of analysis will wrap in, because there's some money in that. Now
there's money there that we can use.
Because it was collected for the purpose of sports parks, so therefore it could be used as parks money?
Right, because as you'll recall, the way the replacement equipment fund is, we set aside money from the general to expense it, to put it in to replace these reoccurring type of items, you know, police cars, public works vehicles, et cetera.
Okay.
But I don't think they went as far. It didn't seem to me. It seemed like there was three transfers, 3 years that they transferred money. And if I recall correctly, it was 140. But I'll double check that.
Yeah. The other thing that's going on, you know, we do get rental fees for the park. And so over the period of the last 10, 12 years, we probably collected $300,000 or $400,000 worth of rental fees that have been paying for maintaining it, but also kind of fuzzes this up. There's some replacement money in there potentially, too. But we'll never figure that out.
Well, I'll figure it out, but I don't think we put money away. I know we're charging fees, but I don't think those fees are enough to accommodate everything that's going on in the rec fund.
Right, and it was never set up as part of our rec enterprise fund. It was always just general fund revenue that came in.
Well, right now it's going in the rec fund.
Oh, it is, into the enterprise fund.
Yep.
Thanks.
Scott, does your memo address Timber Creek Ranch?
No.
Okay, Peggy, can you go back to the slide on Timber Creek Ranch? Have we tracked down that? What I'm trying to figure out is, I understand where Scott's going to head with the comprehensive plan and development agreement that we have put limits on ourselves on where that money can go. But my recollection, it's been a decade since I pulled that agreement out. This is a matter of contract, isn't it? With Cam West, now Toll Brothers.
Yeah, Cam West.
So if we wanted to, and they were willing, we could approach them if we wanted to change how those funds are used.
Well, I don't know that.
Is there any,
I didn't address any specific parks in my memorandum. It was more global than that for a variety of reasons. It might be possible to do what you're suggesting, but there's going to be another step or two in analyzing what precisely the city can do with the money that it has now, and where it can and cannot be spent. And we can also evaluate at that time what the other alternatives might be for talking to the donators of, or the dedicators of that, of those funds.
Yeah, this info, Peggy, is very helpful. The one piece I think we're missing, and I don't know if Councilmember Bond or Todd have recollection of this. This was probably just before you got on the council.
2005, I think it was one of the first things I was involved with, yeah.
But I don't know how they arrived at in that agreement, how or why they allocated it between different types of parks.
I think it's called out specifically in the contract.
No, I know it was called out. I don't know why they called it out in the contract, why they just didn't say, because my recollection was Cam West was going to pay the city $1 million.
Yeah, I remember it as around $1 million, yeah. But maybe we spent part of it on something along the way.
But I'm not worried about the amount. I'm worried about why the agreement would have allocated some to one and some to the other.
Yeah, you'd like to change the character of it.
Well, I'd like to know if we have that ability and if there's any legal prohibition on us. Is it purely a matter of contract, or is there some other legal?
Without having read the contract, I can't answer that.
Fair enough.
But the issue is that they probably, knowing Bill Trim, the impacts that were identified as a consequence of that project probably affected both community parks and neighborhood parks, and that was the reason why the allocation was made. That would be my guess.
Yeah, I think that's the last bit we need to look at, because my recollection is the agreement didn't go into that great of detail. It was pretty short and sweet and to the point. But I think that's the last bit that we'd need to figure out to see what options we have, if any, for approaching Toll Brothers about whether they'd be willing to amend the agreement to give us some flexibility with those dollars.
And you're thinking, instead of community park 50-50 with neighborhood parks, maybe we'd rather have it be all neighborhood or all community or something.
If we needed
not take it out of parks money, but
correct.
How we would split it.
Yeah. Correct. If we needed it in one versus more in one versus the other, whether I can't imagine why they would have an objection or a reason for caring where we put the money into.
We have that money in the bank earning interest, or are they just have to pay us in the future?
Oh, no, we have this money.
Okay.
They had to pay, I think, upon recording of the final plat.
Yeah, so we started to receive money at the end of 14, and we finished receiving it at the end of 16.
Excuse me, seems awfully high, given what I get in the bank.
Yeah. Well, we invest in bonds.
Okay. And? Better return on bonds?
Better return on bonds. And this goes back a long ways.
Okay. So you're comfortable with
Does anybody else have any questions for the next round?
This is really helpful. Thanks.
Are you going to walk us through your memo?
As a preliminary matter, the city, a very long time ago, back in the 90s, determined that from a policy perspective, it wanted to establish mitigation for impacts from developments based on SEPA for the most part. And that underlies a lot of the city's mitigation authority. And that's true for parks as well. The city passed an ordinance in 1990 that established New Creek Code Section 17.48, which is the mitigation authority for the city to require mitigation for project impacts, aside from and in conjunction with SEPA mitigation, State Environmental Policy Act. In connection with the codified rules that establish the mitigation authority, the council periodically adopts updated numbers that define property costs and equipment costs and other factors that change over time, and you adopt those every 2 or 3 years, I believe, and those new numbers are then used as new projects come down the line. Public facilities under MCMC 17.48 are defined fairly broadly as any city-owned, operated, or contracted facility or service, whether existing or planned, including but not limited to parks and open spaces. And so that's how parks are categorized within that chapter. And the city, as you know, has designated two types of parks, neighborhood parks and community parks. Community parks being a larger version that attract from a larger proportionate share of the surrounding community. Neighborhood parks having a smaller draw area, and that's one of the principal reasons why the difference between allocations that are made for development impacts on those parks. In addition, the city is entitled to collect real estate excise tax, REET, R-E-E-T, under RCW 82.46, and that's the basis for the collections in the city's REIT fund. Those funds are statutorily restricted to a number of items, and it's quite a lengthy list of capital projects, which includes public works projects, planning, acquisition, construction, reconstruction, repair of streets, roads, highways, road lighting systems, traffic signals, bridges, storm and sanitary sewer system, parks is included in this list, recreational facilities, law enforcement facilities, fire protection, and other things. The point of that is that the legislature determined through the REIT statutes that cities would be able to use this dedicated money for those kind of capital project purposes, and it's up to the city to decide how and when and in what manner to expend those funds. And so that's within the city's authority. So What we haven't done is go back in detail to see where the precise funds that reside in these, the money that precisely resides in the funds derives from. And if it derives from community park impacts, then under SEPA, it needs to be spent on community park development. And the same is true for neighborhood parks. Now, there may be some analysis that we can do with regard to that. Going forward, we addressed this issue, the council and the city addressed this issue maybe, I want to say, 15 years ago, and we made some changes in the city code to facilitate expenditure of funds, but that's old work, and I haven't been able to resurrect it since we've changed law firms in particular. And so that's one of the steps that we're going to take going forward, and we should have that information for you in the next 2 or 3 weeks, and we can update you on that and join it with the additional information that Peg and Gina will prepare for the whatever the next council meeting is.
I had a question.
Scott. So community park, the only community park we have right now is the sports park, correct?
That's what I understand.
So those funds can only be used on that one park, but they could be used for future community parks, correct?
Correct.
Yes. Even more reason to take a look at seeing if we can commingle those funds together rather than keeping them separated. It really limits the use.
Right. And yeah, so fundamentally, you're right.
That raises another, so I don't, without having the code in front of me, what does the code say we can use the funds for a community park? Is it for acquisition and development?
Well, it's fundamentally for capital purposes. Now, the question then becomes, what qualifies as capital? And there are different definitions for different purposes. The REIT definition of capital is substantially broader than, I believe, the definition is in the city code. And you could go a level down from that and start to evaluate generally applied accounting principles, GAAP, definitions of capital improvements, and that's the piece that we haven't done. I should say the other piece that we haven't done. So we'll be looking at that and coming back to you with additional information on how all of that fits together and kind of what your precise flexibility and range of options are with regard to the funds in the particular park funds.
The other piece that I'd ask you to throw on that list would be whether or not moving to impact fees under GMA under 82020 would give us more flexibility. I'm not sure that it would. It would tie us to having, it tie us to a more capital facilities plan, which we're planning to make more of a real plan this year than a wish list. But I'd be interested.
It's an option that I had planned to advise you on because lots of cities use GMA impact fees. This city, for whatever reason, just made a conscious decision to use SEPA, not to use GMA. And as you know, SEPA and GMA both say you can't double dip. You can't get the same project impact mitigated by both SEPA and GMA. Pick one or the other. It was decided that we don't want to mix and match, and so we're going to pick one of these, and they picked the SEPA method. So, but that's an option, and it can be adopted. And in some respects, it can be more flexible than SEPA, in my opinion.
So going back to my first question, I think I would want to have a better understanding of what our code currently says we can use it for, because we've already got the community park and it's already built out. And unless we identify another community park in our capital facilities plan when we adopt it later in the year.
Well, it may be entirely possible that fundamental replacements of, for example, the turf without which the park cannot function,
right,
would qualify as a capital expenditure as compared to
and that's what I'm asking. We need to find out, yeah, to get that definition.
Right.
I was going to say, I don't know what's in the code. You're right. That's the right question. What's in the code? But when we've calculated the mitigation formulas in the past, there is a component that's the cost of land and the cost of development based on past history. So I'm, at least that's been our past practice, that land, right, is explicitly in there for both community parks and neighborhood parks.
And that makes sense because buildings are capital improvements, even though it's not the land, right? And so you maintain the buildings, but sometimes you need to replace them or do whatever's necessary, and that becomes another capital investment. And under GAAP, what's capital may depend on how long the recoupment period is, or the you guys don't do
depreciation,
but you do on cars and things. Right? I think. Anyway.
Well, they kind of call it that here. We're cash basis.
Okay, cash basis. All right. Anyway, we'll investigate and advise.
Yeah. And again, the history and or complicating factors, I guess, on community parks is Dobson Remillard, if we develop that as a park, is a community park in terms of size. And then in the past, Tambark was talked about once when we were potentially going to put some money into it. That was a community park, end up getting Brightwater mitigation money, and the county did all the development, but we quarter own that facility. So again, that would have been a community park. So having that money there isn't bad, but also looking at the flexibility of pieces of this is also not bad.
What is our current park impact fee or mitigation fee? Does anyone?
I don't have that information here.
I think circling back, I think this came up because we had this question of, oh, gosh, you know, we've got this money that people have paid into North Point Park. We've got to spend it there. And I think then the question was, well, no, hold it. It was it money or was it the donation of land? And it turns out it was a little bit of both. So that kind of that's how we got started down this path. But I think the analysis you're doing makes a lot of sense. Let's unravel this and figure out what we can and can't do, because looking forward, as Councilmember Hoskog points out, it'd be nice to know what we can and can't do and we don't want to get partway into something and go, whoops, that's the wrong kind of money, or take an opportunity to go talk to Cam West's successor and say, could we flex some of this money? So it's a good discussion to have. Thanks.
Up is new business. No.
So, good evening, Council. As we all know, the Mill Creek Sports Park is one of the most popular parks for the city. This project consists of a very limited scope, and the title or the name of the project is pretty self-explanatory. It's for the park turf and light replacement. In your agenda summary, I've identified what's in the scope of the project and what is outside of the scope of the project. The lifespan in general of field turfs is 8 to 10 years. This particular park has a turf that's been around for more than 13 years, so certainly gone beyond its expected life. So the project will consist of replacing the aging turf, which is about 64,000 square feet, and updating the park's lighting system at the field, the skate park, and also the parking lot. The lighting will be LED lighting, which is pretty standard these days for energy efficiency. And then we'll also be adding an ADA-compliant gate for access to the park, to the field, I should say. We'll have a plaque identifying and acknowledging the different funding partners. Now, excluded from the scope of the park are the replacement of the public announcement system, which we know that is an age system, the scoreboard, and also certain areas of the fence that are not necessarily in the best shape. So one of the things that we've done in coordination with the consultant, at least we don't have a contract just yet, hopefully we'll get green light tonight, but we have spoken about getting an assessment, at least an order of magnitude cost estimate as to how much these features would cost should we want to proceed with the replacement of those features or the improvements of those features as part of this project. But as of this time, they're not part of the scope of the project. So the process that we follow for identifying and selecting the consultant is pretty standard. We went to MRSC and identified consultant firms that had the specialty, interviewed them, and had an interview panel and came up with BDA, Bruce Dees and Associates, a local consultant firm that does this kind of work. They are excited about the project. Their fee is identified in this agenda summary for $61,637.75. We have a construction estimate with a contingency and also a construction management and inspection estimate, and those are estimates at this time. We'll be able to fine-tune those numbers once we have the consultant on board for a total project estimated cost at $872,000. This project also has external funding, so we have an RCO grant in the amount of $250,000 that we will be executing shortly. We have $100,000 from Snohomish County, and in Table 2 of your agenda summary, we have identified the local funds, which it was probably preemptive on my part to identify Community Park Fund given our previous discussion, so that should actually reflect just local funds, City of Mill Creek funds, and on the heels of the discussion that we just had, we'll identify the exact fund. Our current CIP identified local funds, 434, so a little bit less than what we now know that the park will cost, and it identified those funds as being REIT funds. As far as the schedule, with council award tonight for the design, we would be able to start design immediately. The design firm was interviewed in March, and they're ready to proceed. And they can have the design completed by August, in which time we would advertise and go to construction in October or November of this year.
Yes.
For RCO, we have to spend the funds by summer of next year. Yes.
Stipulations with the county also, or no?
I don't think that they have, I don't recall a clear deadline for that one. The RCO grant is eligible for design and construction expenses, so we can build these BDA costs, expenditures against the RCO grant, which is great.
Yeah, this is great. I'm glad we've stretched that turf for a long time. You know, your comment was the standard number is 8 to 10. In the Pacific Northwest, we're blessed with the fact that they often last 10 to 12, but we've still got 13. We're almost 14 years on that, so that's great. And it's because staff, I think, has taken a good care of it, and I think your user groups have done a good job of not doing crazy things on it, too. So the whole community has benefited by that. One specific question. You mentioned in your agenda summary that it's new lighting, new LED lighting, the heads, and including a new control system. The contract itself says floodlighting design, including electrical service, but it doesn't explicitly say controls. Are they going to do controls? Do they think they're going to do controls, or are they just talking about electrical service, which is typically just the wiring that brings the juice to the bulb?
They would include control, so yeah.
So you're pretty sure we're clear on that with that?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Great. And then the suggestion is, very quickly, I would suggest that we, the city, get close to Mill Creek Little League and Silver Lake Soccer Club as the major users and say, what is exactly the lines that you want? What are the things you want to go on? When we did this a number of years ago, we came really close to putting the wrong lines on the field for soccer. And it was because the what was required with soccer was changing. And so we said, don't put any lines down for soccer. We're kind of at that same point with soccer again. It would be smart to make sure we put down what's going to be the future lines needed, not what we've been using in the past. And I think Little League may have some of those same things. We first built the park, we had a dirt mound and dirt bases, and then we had to change those out, and then we changed them again. And I think softball would love to have a circle around the mound and portable mounds. All those things are little details, but they do make a difference. And Bruce Dees, as much as they know about, I've seen their name on a lot of these projects, it's important that they're tied to what the local rules are. And by local rules, I don't mean these aren't goofy rules, but I think we need to make sure that the leagues that are operating are happy when we get done. So I'd suggest connecting with those organizations and finding out what the specifics are well ahead of time when they start making drawings.
Thank you. We'll do that, and we'll connect with those end users that will be using the field, making sure that it provides the service that they need.
Yeah. It's probably a policy decision. You know, one of our users over there is the high school for the soccer field. And where it gets difficult is that field is not big enough for adult soccer. It's just big enough for kids up through 11 years old. But the high school team, particularly the girls team, uses that field in the fall when their field's too wet. The lines they would like to have for practices are different from what the kids would be. And so it's a policy decision. How far do we want to go with accommodating adult users, much of which is formally evidenced by the high school team at Jackson, but it's also the community. And so then you put down yellow lines for one and white lines for another, and then you start putting down other lines and other lines. At some point, we don't want to put down too many lines because baseball originally didn't want any lines out there. So we've been through this over the years. So it's not trivial, not too complicated necessarily, but not trivial, but it's important to get those groups together in a room and figure out who we can accommodate, who we can't. Thanks.
Anybody else?
Oh, yeah. I had a couple questions. So first, Peggy, make sure I understand this correctly. We were talking about the fees that are paid to the sports park, and those go into a certain fund. And what was the fund you said there?
It's the recreation fund, which is set up as an enterprise fund, which typically means it supports itself, although the council has made arrangements in the past that we want it to hit at least 85%, and then it gets funded, the rest of it gets funded out of the general fund. So if we don't bring in enough revenue, we not only have revenue from, you know, field rental, but we have our youth sports going through there, some of the other recreation programs. Those are all the monies coming in, and then the monies going out are the expenses related to that. And typically, we don't collect enough to support that fund, so the general fund supports it for the difference.
So the fees from the sports park go to fund the rec fund, but they don't fund it all the way, so we supplement it and get it up to where it needs to be. Correct?
Right.
So I'm just wondering if we've got a sports park here that's expensive to maintain, and it's going to continue to
run down, and I'm wondering if a better use of the fees that we pay to that go into a fund to support these repairs and that go into the park. So the fees that are being generated by the park go in to keep the park going. It just seems to me to be a better use. And then if we want to just fund the rec fund by itself, that then we know where the monies are coming from. It just would be, I think, a little bit smarter to say the people that are using the park are paying for the repairs in the park.
Right.
That was my one question, and maybe that's something we can't resolve tonight, but I'd like to explore that and maybe have more of a discussion about that.
Yeah,
I think that makes sense.
I think during this biennium budget, as we begin to process, we need to look at the different funds that we've set up and what the objectives were way back when they were set up, because I think we've kind of deviated from the original application.
My other question, Gina, was for you. Kind of a weird question, because we're talking about all this expensive cost, right? Why, a little bit I know about the sports park, that public address system really is horrible. Why, when we're updating everything, we chose not to address that? Because it's I wouldn't think it's just as big a price tag as some of the other items, and it's a real detriment to the park.
Sorry, not to address.
Why didn't we address the public address system, the sound system? It's really bad.
It's not included on the RCO grant, so when we submitted the application, that's not an eligible cost. So we can include it in the project if we chose to expand the scope of the project. We just wouldn't get reimbursed for it. So we pay by local.
You answered my question. Okay.
I'm just going to add for history purposes. So remember, the other thing that gets paid out of the other expense that we've got in the Recreation Enterprise Fund is parades and community activities. So that was part of that's why it isn't self-supporting, because we can't expect people to pay to go to a parade or a concert in the park or those kinds of things. So once upon a time, 15% was the number we used. You're right, we could look at it again and see what the right thing is, but it was never realistic to expect the fees coming in for all of our programs to have enough money to cover Easter egg hunt and things like that. So that's why there's a 15%, but you're right, we could look at that again.
If they weren't being moved, does the sports field support itself from its fees?
I don't know that without looking, but I will.
I would say it doesn't, because there's a certain amount of cleanup that's required at any park. You know, the guys go by there every morning and spiff up the bathrooms, et cetera. None of our other parks come even close to paying for themselves.
No.
Most of them don't have any money at all. So this one pays more, but in general, parks are something that are a cost of a service we provide. Parks don't pay for themselves.
We looked at that a few years ago for one of the rec programs. We had this discussion. I don't think it's a priority, but I'd be interested to know what that delta is. What's our annual O&M and what are the fees we're bringing in, just so we...
We have budgeted for the biennium, and I don't know if this is, I think it might be a little understated, $250,000 to send from the general fund over to the rec fund to make up the delta.
I'm sorry, make up the delta for?
The revenues.
The whole fund.
The expenditures exceeding the revenues.
Right, I'm just talking the sports field. Well, if we're able to track, what is our cost?
Yeah, I can look at that and separate it.
Not a priority, but I'm just interested to know if that supports itself.
That number two.
Sure.
For design services for the Mill Creek Sports Park turf and light replacement project in the amount not to exceed $1,637.85.
Moved.
Second.
A motion and a second. Gina, did you catch that?
Yes. Thank you.
One quick question. So if we start in November, December, how long, or maybe I missed this in there, how long are we anticipating the construction to take?
So it's actually advertising for construction in August and having construction completion in October or November. So it's really 2 or 3 months of construction if we start in August.
Great.
Correct.
That wipes out soccer season. So that this is wiping out soccer season, but if that's the best we can do, you'd really like to start this the second week in November to not affect that, but maybe weather-wise and construction-wise, that's a problem. This is a dry site. This is not a typical construction site. We got to worry about compaction of soils and paving and stuff like that. But Soccer runs from the first week of August, and then a 10-week season when school starts, and then they're done. So it'd be the middle of November.
Well, we are coordinating internally. Staff is coordinating and informing the different end users, soccer, et cetera, about the schedule, as we know it tonight.
Thank you. So we have a motion and a second. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
So this project is Seattle Hill Road Preservation. It's an overlay of Seattle Hill Road from Village Green to 35th. And it would consist of a full grind with two inches, an overlay of HMA, hot mix. It's quite lengthy. It's 7,100 feet, and we're familiar with that drive. Along this three-lane arterial. We would also be replacing median curbs, upgrading sidewalk ramps for ADA compliance, and also traffic signals for ADA compliance, and that's in particular the pedestrian push buttons. So in preparation for this project, we went through a similar protocol to what I mentioned in the previous agenda item. We went to our Municipal Research Service Center, MRSC, and identified qualified consultants, interviewed three in March, and selected WH Pacific as the top consultant. The project manager also lives in the area, so it's great having that knowledge about traffic patterns, et cetera. This particular firm has been in the Puget Sound area since 1988, and I'm personally familiar with them. They do a lot of work in the area. Their fee for the design services is $198,040, which includes a management reserve, which they need city authorization in order to use. So the table here on the first page of the agenda summary has an estimated project cost estimate. It shows the design fee from the design consultant, an estimated construction cost of $1,500,000 with a contingency fee of 10%, and then also the construction management and inspection, which is an estimate for $180,000. So this scope and fee from WH Pacific does not include inspection. It's only for design. So the total project estimate at this time is just a little bit over $2 million. As far as the funding sources, this project has federal funds that were part of the 2016 PSRC countywide competition. Staff was able to secure $720,000 for this, and we're planning on obligating those funds as soon as possible, obviously in December or January when the design is ready, so that we can advertise early and get competitive bids. And also we have local funds that would be not only the match of the federal funds, but also to close the delta of the total project costs. Those would be REIT funds. The current CIP shows $930,000 in REIT funds. Based on our estimate, we'd be shy by about $400K, and that's our current estimate as of tonight. As far as the schedule, if we start the design this month, getting the contract awarded tonight, we should have the design complete by the end of the year, and we would be obligating the funds through WashDOT by January of next year, and then advertising right on the heels of that. With these federal funds, we're required to go to construction in the summer of 2019, and we should have the project completed by the end of 2019.
You mentioned the, where is it here? Construction management reserve for $18,000. What's the difference between that and in the line item? There's a construction management line item for $180,000.
So the construction management reserve, that's for this particular scope, and it's related to design. The construction 10% contingency, that's based on a contingency on the construction cost estimate.
So the management reserve is only applicable to this contract with WH Pacific.
Go to the next line, and he wants to hear about the construction management inspection, 180.
Okay. So this refers to once we have a contractor on board, we need an inspector on site, full-time inspection, and so that's what that 180 represents. This particular contract also has federal funds, so we need support administering those federal funds during construction, tracking the IDRs, the inspection daily reports, payments to the contractor, et cetera.
I guess I don't remember seeing one of our design contracts in the last few years that has a management reserve. Is that common?
We're disclosing it. Usually it's embedded.
Okay.
You know.
Okay. Maybe that's what it's we usually don't get into the line items of the contract, so it called out and confused me a little bit. So if it's customary, then no problem.
Let's think about another 18 that without coming back to us and talking about it again, you could decide, yes, we're going to spend the 18, but it's up to you guys. They don't get to spend it.
Right.
They don't get to spend that time or that draw on those expenses unless you say so, but you don't have to come back to us
correct
to ask for that 18.
It's really a $180,000 contract with a contingency for 18 grand.
Yes.
Because the 18 is within the 198.
That's correct.
That's okay.
Yes.
Now I got it. Thank you.
No chip seal this time, Kirk?
No chip seal.
I have a question. To make sure I'm correct, now this is the Seattle Hill Road that borders the parks on one side and the MCCA developments on the other side, correct?
Correct.
So I know when that Seattle Hill Road was first built, that was even before the parks was built. So it's been a while, and having been a resident in that area, I'm well aware of a lot of the residents along that Seattle Hill Road are extremely unhappy about when the day was that they cut through to 35th, and Seattle Hill Road became a bit of a thoroughfare, and they've tried to do everything they can to keep the speed limit down, and I'm just wondering if this opportunity to actually redo it would be a good opportunity to look at and I don't understand this that well, and you understand it much better than me, but to look at the design phase as an opportunity to say, how else could we structure Seattle Hill Road to maintain that lower volume of traffic? And also, are we looking at the right kind of materials to keep the noise reduction as low as possible? Because the homeowners in that area are going to be very, very interested in what's going on with that road, because it'll affect their land values and their quality of life.
Right. So as far as the noise, that's something that we'll certainly look into if there's something that can be included in that HMA mix to reduce the noise. But in general, the noise is really addressed by the speed limit. One of the things that currently, I mean, I know we have posted signs, et cetera, but the pavement markings have been worn out. And there used to be the bars that show the speed limit 35 or 25 miles per hour. Those are worn out. So that will be something that will help. As far as reducing the volumes of traffic or users, I mean, with the growth that's happening in this area, you know, all we can do is provide the engineering, so all the posted speeds, the pavement markings, et cetera, to help with that. The median islands are intended to be a form of traffic, you know, attenuation, if you will, and then enforcement. I mean, those are the...
One of the issues was putting in speed bumps. And the cost to do that, you know, after the fact was prohibitive, and so it was turned down, and we're just going to reduce the speed to 25 and really patrol it well. But now that we're looking at construction from, you know, resurfacing the whole road, could that be something that could be looked at again?
We can look at it, but it being an arterial or in collector, I doubt it that that's a best alternative. We will look at that. We can look at it. Just off the cuff, I think that speed bumps on a road that's heavily used like that may cause some other traffic issues, backing up of traffic, et cetera. So.
Well, they're not an issue if you only go 25 miles an hour. They really don't hurt you. But when you start going 35 or 40, they can really rack up your suspension, and that's kind of the purpose. I just would like to let you know I have a personal preference to make sure that we're taking care of those residents along that road. So that's something that's going to be real important to me when we look at the design phase, and I want to go on record right now as being very concerned about it and very concerned about this opportunity to maybe rectify the situation for those homeowners, because Seattle Hill Road was not a thoroughfare. We punched that through after the parks went in, and that changed a lot of quality of life for a lot of people, and now is an opportunity to maybe help return that quality of life, because it's, if anyone's ever lived on that street, in that backyard, it's horrible, especially when they start going 35 miles an hour, 40 miles an hour, speeding through there. I do think it's something that I'm going to be very, very, very aware of, so I wanted to make sure you're very aware of it as we go forward on the project.
Certainly, and it's something that, you know, as part of this design, we can incorporate it into the design, looking, at least evaluating it.
Perfect.
And depending on what is the outcome of that evaluation, then we would address costs, because as far as the federal grant, those type of things were not included in the grant.
That would be so great. That's, yeah. I couldn't ask for any more.
Correct.
Excuse me, Mayor Pruitt, could you speak up? We can't hear what you said.
I'm sorry. And we can get a report from first responders, our fire, our police, about how they feel about going over speed bumps, because in the past they've been pretty vocal. Councilmember Todd.
These are good points, but some of us have got lots of some long history, and so a lot of these things have been talked about before. It doesn't mean we shouldn't look at them again, but I would encourage us to start with pulling out the old files where speed bumps cause it to be noisier because people deaccelerate, go over the bump, clunk, clunk, and then accelerate again, 25 miles an hour, 35 miles an hour, whatever speed it is. And so we had some studies before that said this is not going to help. People wanted to get into the quiet pave, and that was a fiasco that didn't work out on the highways. It doesn't work at 25 miles an hour. You know, we went through a reasoned engineering analysis of this and said this was a reasonable thing to do. As Councilmember Steckler is right, you know, let's think about those things, but pull out the old files and start with that data first before we send these guys off time and materials to research stuff from scratch.
And actually, I do remember that report because I sat out there when that report was presented as a Parkside resident, so I do recall hearing all of those issues. Yeah.
But we spent a lot of money and a lot of time answering a lot of questions all over the map.
As part of that,
$6 million sound walls was part of it, too. You don't need to open that file, but
roundabout.
As part of that, you lowered the speed limit going up the hill. There was a speed limit on the rest of Seattle Hill Road, 35 or 30?
35, we put it at 25 and put up those speed signs. And then the police have been trying to, you know, had spent some time out there. And I think it's a lot slower than it used to be. 35 was the posted limit. People were doing 50. Mark remembers it was.
Actually, still had people reacting to the 25 and then honking their horns as like, oh, it's a noise reduction. Well, I'm going to create noise.
It was ugly.
So I share your concerns. I was here when you were here addressing us, and we have a lot of folks that have seen a significant change in their quality of life there as this thing's evolved. I just don't know what the solutions are. So if you stumble into something that could address those concerns, I share his concern. I'm just not as encouraged today, having gone down the path we did, where we didn't find the solution I'd hoped we'd find. The best we came up with was a reduction in speed and the medians, and with a desire to sort of mitigate that, limit the trucks.
And I only bring this up because we're at a different stage now. We're putting a new road in. Maybe there's something we're looking at now that's not an afterthought. If there's an opportunity, at least we could tell the citizens we did think about them. And worst case is we can always go to the most successful solution of all, which was flashing blue lights, because having lived there, whenever the police were there giving out tickets, people slowed down. That worked really, really well.
Okay, so what Gene is asking for is a motion to authorize the city manager or mayor to execute a contract with WH Pacific Inc. for design services for the Seattle Hill Road Preservation Project in the amount not to exceed $198,040.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Passes unanimously. Next up is the consent agenda. Approval of checks number 58649 through 58725 and ACH wire transfers in the amount of $167,598.55. Audit Committee, Council Members Bond and Todd.
No exceptions?
No exceptions.
Payroll and benefit ACH payments in the amount of $503,084.19. Audit Committee, Council Members Bond and Todd.
No exceptions?
No exceptions.
So do we have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
So moved.
Second.
Motion and second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Passes unanimously. Down to reports. I have none. Councilmember Vaughn?
No report.
No report.
Due to lack of a quorum, the Parks and Rec Board did not meet this past month, so I have no
report. Okay. We have planning schedules in the back of our packets. Audience communication, one more time. Go ahead, Mary Kay, is it 3 minutes? Got my timer.
It's very interesting that after what I brought up to you when I was up here at the beginning of the meeting, that you just approved an item that was requested by staff to give the city manager or the mayor signing authority to a contract. It's not the mayor's job. You're telling me that the city manager is functioning as a city manager, that she is working from home and that she is signing things and whatever. It's her job. It is not a city council member's or mayor who is ceremonial to be signing those documents. So you just gave authority to your city manager to usurp the authority, to your mayor to usurp the authority of your city manager. Because she can sign it, you just gave her permission to sign it without even taking it to the city manager. Because it said, signed by the city manager or the mayor. Why are you doing that? Is the city manager working or not? Is she signing documents or not? Why are you giving authority to a council member, not a staff person? Why is there not an administrative staff officer who doesn't have the authority to sign documents in the absence of the city manager? Why isn't your finance directors? Why isn't your public works director? Why isn't it a paid administrative officer of the city authorized to do that? You just approved exact thing that we were talking about. It is not the mayor's responsibility. It is not her authority, and you just handed it to her. And I and the citizens want to know why. Why are you doing this? It's not part of RCWs. She doesn't have the authority unless you gave it to her, and you can't give her the authority to do that. You do not have the authority as city council members to say, yes, our mayor can, well, we'll just let her sign all this stuff. You got a city manager who supposedly is working. Is she or isn't she? But this woman, this mayor, is not an administrative officer of this city. She's a council member like the rest of you. Deal with it, people. The citizens are getting really ticked at this. And as I said, it has changed from a concern about whether the city manager is at work to what the heck are you guys doing? That's not legal. Deal with it.
Walked out.
Okay. Anybody else? Going once, twice? Okay, with that, we're going to recess to executive session for two purposes. One, to discuss potential litigation pursuant to RCW 4230-110-1I and review the performance of a public employee pursuant to RCW 4230-110-1G. And we will be in executive session up to an hour and 25 minutes or 8:30. So action may or may not be taken. Thank you. Okay, so I'd like to propose a motion that given the as yet unresolved issues and the likelihood it will take more time to resolve those issues, The motion will be that we authorize and place the city manager on paid administrative leave for 45 days effective immediately. Is that it?
I'd make that motion.
Second.
Motion and a second. Any discussion? All those in favor signify.
I'm sorry, if we made it effective immediately, are there contracts that need to be dealt with, or should we make it effective Monday?
We still have to have those contracts signed.
So I think we should make it effective immediately.
Okay.
And then we will delegate a staff member to assume the role of city manager, and we'll direct. I would propose that we ask the city manager to consult with hiring an interim.
That answers my question.
Attorney, sorry, city attorney, not manager.
That answers my question.
Okay, so the motion stands?
Yes.
So we have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Passes unanimously. And that given the city manager is now on administrative leave, the motion would be that the council direct the city attorney to determine the interest and availability of Robert Stowe to serve as interim city manager during the absence of Rebecca Palazzotto and enter into a short-term contract with Mr. Stowe for that purpose. It is the council's desire that, if available, Mr. Stowe commence services as soon as feasible and diligently pursue such work in consultation with the council.
So moved.
Second.
A motion and a second. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Passes unanimously. Is there any other business, Scott?
Wait. Sorry, we do have business.
I have business. There are contracts that need to be signed before we hire Mr. Stowe or see if he's even available. I'm hopeful that we can appoint an interim city manager before the interim city manager gets here. My recommendation would be Chief Elwin, if he would be interested to take on the administrative role at this point until we can secure an interim city manager.
Be an acting city manager.
I would support that as well. The chief's here. We could probably ascertain his interest in taking on these extra duties.
5 days.
Can you come up?
A few days.
I don't think any of us know how long it's going to take to secure the interim city manager. So I guess you've heard my motion or my request that you would essentially be the acting city manager at this point and operate in all those functions.
Or is that just okay?
On the chief's acceptance and willingness to assume the position temporarily, I'd make the motion that Chief Greg Elwin be the acting city manager.
I second.
By saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Passes unanimously. Anything else, Scott?
Can we just, I don't know if it needs to be addressed now, but in the past when we've given department directors these extra duties, there was some compensation changes made. Can we do that consistent with how we've done that in the past?
It's, I think it...
10%. It's been the past practice. 10% of their base pay is added during that period of time. And hopefully it's going to be short, but I think you're right. We should be consistent.
Yeah, we've asked the city attorney to move quickly, but thank you for stepping up.
I would second that.
Else?
Does that need to be a motion or
city attorney? Do we need to do that? I think we do.
So I make a motion that we compensate our acting city manager consistent with past compensation packages, which is, what do we say, 10%? Is that what we're told?
During the period he's in that capacity.
During the time that he's tasked with the extra duties.
I second that.
Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Passes unanimously. Okay.
I'm just looking at our chief. He's kind of got these big white eyes like, what happened?
Hey, with that, we're adjourned at 9:50.